Mini episode 373 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at sportsology.info.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to FDH Lounge mini episode number 373. You've got original FDH Lounge dignitaries Rick Morris and Jason Jones coming at you for our second week of breaking down season 5 of Justified in real time, talking about it right as it ends up. And Jason, what did you think this week? We talked about this last week. We thought it was both a good episode last week. Not the most thrilling thing in the world, but something that we enjoyed, something that was really kind of setting the groundwork for things to happen later. And I find myself coming back to that same description for this week. It doesn't live up to some of the great episodes that we saw towards the end of last season, but I'm not slamming them for that because in my mind, they may very well be setting the tone for that to come.
Well, I hate to stir up the hipster contingent, but I feel like we're getting closer. Now, this was not the foreign episode with these big moments of, oh, snap, so much this week. But, we're back in Harlem. We're sort of getting nestled back in to some more of the local stuff. But there were still a good handful of moments that make you take a pause for a second and really try to reflect on where it's headed.
It's interesting because some of the episodes earlier in the season, we've seen this particularly, I think, season 2, maybe a little bit season 3, can be a little bit more standalone. This is a heavily serialized show. Some of the things tonight, I don't know that we're necessarily going to see as much carryover from. We saw the reintroduction of Loretta back on the canvas, which some of the very vague descriptions had kind of indicated. A young friend of Raylan's gets into some trouble, and I knew that from what I had read that Allison, played by Amy Smart, was going to be her social worker. So it wasn't too hard to put two and two together to figure out Loretta was coming back tonight. But like I said, that kind of feels a little bit like a standalone. Rodney, the drug dealer from Memphis, he doesn't necessarily play as big of a role, but he's always compelling whenever he's on screen. As we said, the introduction of Allison tonight, who is probably going to end up being an interest of some sort for Raylan's before too long. So what were your thoughts on that? Because, again, we saw last week what they continued to do with the characters. We saw the very brief reintroduction last week of Sammy Tonin. Every episode really seems to have some new characters coming back in or old characters to make an impact, whether it's going to be, like I said, with Loretta, which looks to be kind of a momentary thing for right now, or other developments like Allison that look like they're going to have more impact throughout the season.
Well, right off the top, the more core characters we expected to see, then you introduce new characters, creates a certain dynamic with the Florida Crows, for instance, and the introduction of Allison and a couple of these other smaller characters that are either new or not terribly impactful from before. Now, for instance, we go back to the guy from Memphis, whose name escapes me at the moment. That was something we've seen before. We know who that is, but it was inconsequential for the most part. The whole going back to selling the junk that was in the bags that then got damaged and it was a whole big mess and he was gone. So we know of his existence, but it wasn't impactful then. I think it is now, and this is another reason that we look at how all of these little sprinkling of what have you is working towards a bigger point in this season. And that's why I think the first two episodes really didn't give away too much, but it was absolutely in no way an indication that that would continue. Because I think what we've seen with Loretta, with the Memphis connection, what we've already seen with the Canadians, what they showed at the very end there, that Boyd claims needs to be cleaned up is going to be hugely impactful. So although these episodes aren't you know, at the edge of your seat the entire time, they're laying the groundwork, and that includes the characters that we're seeing in the last two episodes.
Those are very excellent points that you raise, because all of those things are going to be among the core sort of pillars for the season. And I don't know how much of the season this next thing is going to take up, but something that you and I both watched, we were both on the line off air watching it in real time at the very end there. Art starting to pull at the strings of what Raylan did at the end of last season. And this is something I had read about previously. I knew this was coming. I didn't mention it to you because I try to avoid dropping too many spoilers on you. But just that, again, Art was going to – I didn't know how it was going to come about. But it turns out, again, that Sammy just happened to have called the office, was looking for Raylan, and that just – that got Art's spidey senses kind of tingling a little bit here. And – I was almost a little bit surprised at the time it didn't come up. And maybe that's one of these things where when Art and, God forbid, that AUSA Vasquez gets involved in this and anybody else, good thing Agent Barkley from the FBI is not around to cause any more problems on something like this. But it's one of those things where you kind of wonder why they didn't put two and two together initially, because it happened so clean the way that it worked out in Raylan's favor and nobody questioned it. But now they're starting to question it. I could hear you groaning on the phone here off air watching it. That's another thing that looks like it's going to get messy for Raylan.
You're killing me, Art. You're killing me. Just let it go. You know, it's funny because most people that watch this show kind of watch it with a keen eye and trying to stay even keel. But for me, I'm absolutely in complete fanboy mode when I'm watching this show. When Boyd was talking in the hospital back staircase, I was just you know, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed watching that exchange, because that was fun. And then, you know, there's moments where, you know, you get excited, you get down. And with that, you're just like, come on, Art. just leave it alone. He got away with it. You know, you gave him the choice. You know, and if he's going to go do what he's going to do, then, you know, leave the Marshal Service out of it, which he did. So just accept that Raylan won that thing. The thing comes up. His spidey sense goes tingling, whatever, and walk away. I don't know why he's got to, you know, why he's got to mess with it. But, you know, that's who Art is, and I don't know that he has a compulsion necessarily to feel like he needs to know everything, but there are certain things that he just can't let be, and that's one of them, and I'm sure that is absolutely going to come back to bite Raylan in some way.
Well, it's very, very, very intriguing what's going on there. It's going to be a big part, I think, of how this season sets up. And, again, I had indicated to you off air, wanted to kind of, once we're done pulling the meat off the bones of this episode, bring it full circle tonight by getting to some talk about Boyd and Raylan and what appears to be happening with their characters moving into Season 5 here. But as a little bit of a tease towards that, I was talking to you about this off air when we were both reacting to what Art did, and I said to you at the time, it to me brought up shades of Season 2. This was after, I think, Art, he never proved that Raylan helped Wynonna put the money back in, that Wynonna took the money and was going to return it, but he basically knew that Raylan was involved in that. And he made a comment to him, something along the lines of a lousy marshal, a great marshal with a lousy lawman. And that's the whole thing, too. A little bit of, with that outlaw blood that Raylan has in him, he's going to do the kind of thing where, again, the law had him backed into a corner last year, largely because of Art at the end of the season there, when Art said, if you do anything to Nicky Augustine, don't bother coming back to work after your suspension. Raylan's not going to sit there and take it. That's not who he is. And that's, I guess, what's always going to prove the tension with Art there, because, you know, I'm not saying that Art would rather that Wynonna and the baby got massacred and he could say I'm sorry and everything, but maybe it's just that Art has more faith in the system. Art almost seemed to have a naive faith in the system that Wynonna and the baby would be protected. Raylan knew better, and any time that Raylan knows better, he's generally right. He's going to do something about it, and that's why I think you and I and our audience sympathize with him, because he is really doing what's got to be done.
Yeah. Yeah, there is a little bit of the outlaw gene there. I may not be fair to put it that way, because clearly the character is rebelling from such a notion whenever possible. And you could tell, we saw that with scene outside with Loretta, the boyfriend, the two henchmen, and then our kingpin from Memphis, where Arlo's name comes up, and you can almost feel Raylan rolling his eyes. But clearly that's part of his makeup, and it's what makes him the lovable guy that he is, because he's not completely clean. He's not completely always, lawman first. There's a little Old West in him, which, again, goes back to the whole analogy of an Old Western. But clearly, that's part of the decision-making process for Raylan, and you bet your ass when baby, former missus, and someone who he still may have feelings for, or at least likes in general, he's not going to sit down and just say, "Yes, sir, I'll be back," you know, with bells on. It's just not going to happen. So, yeah, absolutely. He was going to do something about it, and it would have been naive both for Art to think that everything would end up hunky-dory and that Raylan would take it sitting down.
Yeah, that's and that's probably just going to lead to Art feeling even more betrayed as he sort of deflects some of his own feelings towards him. He's going to feel stupid, and he's going to blame Raylan on it. He's going to deflect that out onto Raylan probably, and it's going to be a little bit more of an issue towards them. I will say, you may or may not have seen this, but it was basically made official, I believe, in the last day or so here, that we are now in the penultimate season of Justified, for whatever it's worth. Season 6 is going to be the one that wraps everything up, and that was by choice of executive producers Graham Yost and Tim Oliphant. They decided to do that. FX wanted to have it go longer, but wasn't going to force their hand. So we've been looking at a situation here all along of where Art's on borrowed time. I believe last year it was stated that he had about a year left. And one of these other times when we're doing a breakdown, when it's a little bit more germane to the episode, I'd like to explore the timeline with you, because I find the timeline to be kind of strange, that we've only got about 15 or 16 months of what's supposed to be real time since Raylan first ended up in Kentucky, even though it's been spread out over these seasons. But my guess is the end of this thing is going to coincide with Art retiring and whatever happens in the office then. So, you know, the whole string of developments between Raylan and Art, that looks like it's going to have something that's going to have resonance carrying all the way through the season or the series finale, I believe.
Well, first of all, give me a few minutes to digest the fact that we have a finite end point, which I'm not happy about.
I knew you would be displeased. I'm sorry to be the one to break it to you.
This is now the second show that I love in as many days that I've discovered when their end will be, and I'm not crazy about that. Putting that aside, I think deep down I always thought that the end would have something to do with Art moving on, just having done it long enough and not, you know, the desire to not deal with the BS anymore and go live, I guess, the remainder of his life as stress-free as possible would make perfect sense. The question is, who does that change? And we talked last week and said that if they were trying to go down a path where Raylan ends up taking over for Art, then the series almost has to be over, as much as I hate these absolute scenarios where, you know, X happens, therefore this needs to happen. I don't like it, but I think any situation where Raylan is taken out of the field in order to run a field office is the day that it's over. That being said, from where we sit today, I cannot fathom the idea that Raylan would do such a thing, or that the show would even go in that direction. So it is interesting. ADA Vasquez seems to be getting more and more screen time, so there's something to entertain there. I don't know that you necessarily go from you know, assistant district attorney to something of this nature, but he seems to be more prevalent, and that is making my mind say that something's going on there. So we'll see. I don't know.
Well, by the way, too, and just to clarify, his thing, I believe, is assistant U.S. attorney. So he's federal, like the marshals,
okay.
Albeit I think he's in a different department. And as far as it goes with Art, what was said last year, I believe, in that conversation that he had with the other guy running a field office in one of the earlier episodes, I think it was episode two, actually, because it was the one where he was explaining about to the guy about how he was going to have to tell Raylan that his dad just shoved somebody in prison. And, you know, the key to doing it is make it casual, like you're talking about the weather. That was the second episode last year. And it was indicated, I believe, in that conversation, he had a year left because there's a mandatory cutoff age, and apparently it's a fairly early one, and it's non-negotiable. So Art is going to be going to find something else to do with the rest of his life, whether he wants to or not. And he doesn't seem like he's in a great hurry, but he does seem like the kind of guy who's going to enjoy retirement, having said that. But, yeah, will it be Raylan in that spot? And my early working theory, knowing that Yost and Oliphant wanted to end it after six seasons, is you look at what happened at the end of last year and about how that was supposed to be a career-making kind of a case for Raylan when he was the man who was most responsible for bringing in Drew Thompson. Then where it ends up being, well, okay, then there's this Dewey Crowe unpleasantness here. He cost the government 300 Gs. I guess they're looking at it like we can only throw so many roadblocks in the guy's way before he gets that job if that's where it's going to end. So that's my working theory, is that Raylan's going to stub his toe a lot in the next two seasons, just enough to slow him down to where it wouldn't be, how come he's not in charge of that office yet? Because he's had some big wins thus far. I think the Robert Quarles thing probably reflects very well on him, getting rid of him, the work that he did against the Bennett family. So Raylan's been racking up some W's. In order to keep him out of Art's chair, you almost have to throw some of this other unpleasantness and obstacles in his way, don't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I don't exactly understand how the U.S. Marshal Service works as far as promoting from within, especially. But it seems to me that any sort of law enforcement situation is, yes, doing a good job helps in the process, but then it always seems like TV, movies, whatever, you're always trying to keep your best asset in their job. So it's almost as if the more successful Raylan is, the more likely he is to still keep his current title and position. So that if this stubbing toe idea continues on, maybe there's a possibility that they discover that although he's had some successes in his career, he's costing us more than he's helping, and therefore might be better suited in an administrative position like Art's. So, I mean, that whole storyline can go either way, depending on how he gets there. I just think that unless they just decide that to end the series with Gutterson moving up or Rachel moving up or some other person leapfrogging Raylan in order to keep Raylan where he is, I think ultimately if that is not the case, that means Raylan is destined to be Art, and then, you know, roll credits.
Well, that's very thought-provoking what you said there. And by the way, on that last point, they've made a few references to the point that basically Art kind of was Raylan back in the day, and that's why Art deep down I think does have a soft spot for him, because he did a lot of the same crazy crap. But the notion of promoting Raylan up to get him out of the way so he's not in the field, a very cynical thing for the government to do, but that happens a lot of places. That would be an interesting twist on this thing ending. And I'll tell you what, we've been spending this time talking about Raylan. I'm going to call an audible here, and I wanted to go big picture talking about him and Boyd, but maybe we should just split it into the main character arcs here tonight, maybe take all the Raylan stuff here at this point in time for the sake of continuity. What I wanted to bring up with you before we switch this to Boyd is something that occurred to me. I found it a little aggravating at the time, just because I was so jumpy for the action. In the season finale, I wanted to see what was going to happen in the showdown with Nikki Augustine. And they threw in that conversation in the car between Raylan and Boyd, and I just took it as kind of a throwaway at the time. But the more I've been thinking and quite frankly reading some of the other things out there on the Internet, that looks like we may look back on that as a very pivotal kind of a thing as far as the journey of these characters and where they're going, because the things that they said to each other, each man kind of has a cartoon vision of the other one. And as far as how Raylan views Boyd, Raylan just views Boyd as just this unreconstructed criminal, you know, a no-good Nick. Yes, charming, but, you know, he even said to him about Ava something along the lines of, you'll love anything that lets you put your head down on a pillow and not feel like you're the bad guy. And Boyd actually kind of turned the tables on Raylan and more or less said the same thing. You want to believe you're not a bad guy deep down. He had needled Raylan a couple episodes earlier. You're an outlaw like me and your daddy. You should just embrace it. Each man's got a cartoon view of the other, and each man feels that they are completely righteous deep down. And I think the truth lies somewhere in between. And it's very, very interesting looking at this, because with Raylan and his journey going forward here, I think he really envies, even if he can't admit it, what Boyd has with Ava. And he's kind of dismissive, and he's looking at it with, oh, Ava's just drawn to bad boys, and, you know, you just love her because she's, you know, devoted to you. He's so cynical about Boyd in that way, but Boyd is cynical about Raylan, and it goes to what we've been talking about the last couple of minutes here, about being the bad guy deep down, which he isn't. You and I both agree on that. I've read some stuff here. Some of these critics, oh, is this an anti-hero show? Like, no, sorry, hipster, it's not an anti-hero show. He's a good guy with some shades of gray. He's still got a little bit of the trauma of growing up the outlaw, but again, willing to take the law into his own hands. Very pragmatic in that way, I think. That what Boyd said to Raylan in that conversation, I thought was very enlightening as far as the view of Raylan and how we're supposed to see him going forward.
Well, clearly, I just wish we could address all the hipsters at once. Anyway, I'm sure that's a thought that's been uttered many times, has nothing to do with Justified. But yeah, there's a character issue here, and I remember, and I can't say exactly what episode it was or what season it was, but the moment when the Ava Boyd thing stopped being about pity or, you know, their little back and forth fighting each other off and then embracing that they were a thing. And then you have that scene where Boyd takes Ava out. They're just sitting in the pickup of a truck where he opens up a box and it's like, here it is. He's laying it all out. No real effect for anyone else watching. He wasn't doing it to make a scene. He was doing it because that's what he had. And deep down, you got to think, happy for them, not happy for them, doesn't matter. But you got to look at that thing and say that scene and think to yourself, I don't see Raylan having that anytime soon. Whether that's a motivating factor for him separately or not. But the Ava thing with Boyd is, I think, significant. You're starting to see that in those prison visiting room scenes. And it just, I think, comes back to Boyd's character in general. If anybody is an anti-hero, it is Boyd, but that's really trying to simplify his character. I think Boyd Crowder is one of the better characters we've seen play out in quite some time. And that says something about the show and that the main character is not that guy, but he's damn close. There's so much, we could do a whole show just on the Boyd v. Raylan dynamic.
Sure.
But as far as this sort of cartoon version of each other, absolutely. They clearly don't see each other the way we see them, respectively. And I'm sure that's going to continue to play out till the end.
Well, and that's a lot of the fun of watching it play out, is that we have more information about each of those two than they have about each other. And their own blind spots are a big part of that. And before I switch over fully to the Boyd stuff and join you in that conversation, last thing on Raylan, I agree with you that I want to think the end game is him and Wynonna getting together and raising their child. They clearly love one another. That seems to me to be a lot of his demons. He's got demons of being afraid that he's going to be Arlo. And I've been reading some critiques online in the last week here of people saying that it's becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy, that he's going to be an Arlo-type father if he doesn't shed this fear. That it's if he is an abandoned father, which he clearly doesn't want to be, but if he just kind of keeps the whole thing at arm's length and buries his hurt about Winona dumping him and all of that kind of stuff, you know, he's got to come to terms with that, and that's his personal journey that I think is going to play a lot in the end of the show here. He had talked about going to Glencoe at the end of season two with Winona and maybe getting out of the regular part of the Marshal Service. Maybe he leaves this life behind at the very end altogether. It's just, it's worth taking a look at and starting to think about now that we know when the end is specifically. As it goes with Boyd, I have to tell you that, again, and maybe we should reverse engineer on this and look a little bit at the character and then maybe wrap on the specifics of tonight, because since we're talking on the characters right now, I said last week, I thought we were seeing Boyd more as season one Boyd. And by that, I mean the pilot, because anything after the pilot, he was then a preacher man, then the disillusioned preacher man, whatever. But think about how he was in the pilot. And I'm thinking to myself during the week here, I'm like, you know what? I have to revise and extend my remarks on that, because it's a little bit sloppy the way that I said that, because he is as full on an outlaw as he was in the pilot. But if you remember, Jason, and I know you do, he had that anarchist energy in the pilot. I mean, he had that smile on his face when he was shooting the stinger and everything. I mean, yeah, he was into white power, but he's always had fun while he's doing it. And in recent years, having a quip and a good story and being a sharp-dressed criminal, relatively speaking, and being that guy. Season 5 Boyd is an angry badass who has lost the thing in his life that matters the most. He doesn't have the sidekicks around him anymore who are anywhere near his level. Jimmy tried to be tonight briefly in that scene, and then he got slapped down. There's no Devil. There's no Johnny. There's no the other guy from last year that Ron Elder played, Colt. Now, Colton Rhodes, he's gone. They're all gone. He's got Wynn Duffy as a partner, but he's got to do a lot of his own dirty work. And he's up to it. This is a boy that we've never seen. You know, in a tiny way, I was right to refer back to the pilot last week, but in a bigger sense, I'm wrong, because this is a new boy, and this is a scarier boy.
Yeah. First thought, real quick. I'm watching the. I don't know what it's like for you guys out there, but out here, we get them back to back.
Yes, I'm watching it also as we're talking.
So I'm about the stairwell scene.
Yes,
and it's absolutely beautiful. Just the whole the electronic cigarette thing. You know, I'm going to smoke. I'm going to do it the old-fashioned way, which is just his way of just sort of like putting his toe in the water before he really gets rolling. And I wanted to step aside for a second. I don't think you're as much a fan of Saturday Night Live as I am, but there was an episode this last season where they did a bit on these electronic cigarettes. I have no idea why they're doing product placement for this. It doesn't seem to be very important to the show. But you'll love this, because there's a whole thing where SNL did a commercial for these things, except that it was meth because it's blue.
Yes.
And it's this whole Breaking Bad deal. And then the last thing, and for anyone listening, you know, earmuffs it if you need to, but you see Aaron Paul just enters the screen and takes a drag off this electronic cigarette, exhales, pauses for a second, and goes, "It's blue, bitch." Which I couldn't, this whole scene, as much as I love Boyd and I love his back and forth, I couldn't stop visualizing Aaron Paul dropping the traditional Aaron Paul bitch. Anyway,
I love it.
Getting back on track, though. you're absolutely right. Going into, you know, this last, not today's episode, but last week's episode, the idea of making that analogy to the anarchist mentality, the screw the man, create as much carnage as possible kind of Boyd, and relish in the experience, really enjoy it for the fun of it, Boyd felt like it was an analogy that worked. Absolutely. And then today, as we're watching this, because this is the first time we see Boyd and Ava together, knowing that their whole plan to get her out is flapping in the wind, which we are also brought back to at the end of this episode. But the Ava dynamic is killing him. He really does seem like one of those people that's so absolutely steadfast in his devotion with one person that you take her out of it and it's going to drive him insane. And that may be a season-long ordeal we have to deal with. Then you take into account that there are business troubles. The Canadian thing's about to dry up and dry up in a hurry after what we just saw. There's the whole thing about maybe turning to Mexico. So money's a problem in at least three different ways. His love interest is a problem. Raylan's always around the corner. So it's almost like his whole world is sort of falling apart thread by thread. So there's absolutely a new Boyd, as you mentioned, a more, I think, will be growingly more desperate and might be inclined to be a little more risky than we're used to, throw caution to the wind. But the beautiful thing about Boyd is even with all those things hanging, you still have that scene at the bar with all of his local dealers where Wynn Duffy is already starting to, you know, 30 seconds in, Wynn Duffy's bit off more than he can chew, and then Boyd just walks in and he is Boyd and completely turns that situation around, at least in the moment, in a way that only Boyd can.
Yeah, that's his gift. That's what he's able to do. And, yeah, his devotion to Ava, and part of it, again, it goes back to that car ride, and we talk about that, and the deficiencies of both men, but also how they see one another. We talked about it already with Raylan, that the situation with having a family with Winona and their baby girl is slipping away from him. Go back a little bit further last season, about mid-season. The highest that Boyd and Ava were ever riding, when they made the deal with the Detroit Mafia, they put the squeeze on the guys from Clover Hill. They went to get the Dairy Queen franchise out of them. A couple generations from now, our family will be clean. That was the height of their dream at that point in time. And now it's all ashes. I mean, you can't even visualize any of that because, like you said, yeah, everything's crashing down around them. Everything on the business front is very desperate with the crumbling of the Detroit Mafia and all of the manifestations of that and about the drugs at the end tonight apparently getting ripped off from them. He is more desperate than he's ever been, as we've both indicated. And again, it's going to fuel him in all kinds of different directions, and it's going to have him really, really doing things. It's funny because he's always been the guy where in a default situation, right, you, as you would figure with an anti-hero, which, you know, we'll loosely call him for these purposes, you root for him at least against the other criminals. You know, I don't think anybody would, you know, with any kind of moral compass whatsoever was rooting for him against Raylan last year during Decoy. Wanted him to get to Drew Thompson and hand him over to the Detroit Mafia. But if it's Boyd against the Bennetts, if it's Boyd against Robert Quarles, you do tend to root for Boyd. And it's going to be a situation
you know what,
this
Rick,
year.
I'll take it a step further.
Yeah.
And make a quick sports analogy here. Watching this show, Raylan Givens is your home team. That's the team you grew up with. That's the team that your father's father's father rooted for. And therefore, you're from that part of town. But then there's always another team out there. And you may pick them on purpose, or they may just have pieces that you like that you say, if my team's not playing, that's who I want to win. And that's really how it is, for at least for me. If it comes down to Raylan v. Boyd, it's Raylan. If it comes down to Boyd versus just about anybody else, I kind of want to see him come out on top, as long as it doesn't exceed or impugn Raylan.
That's a great point. And again, and it's hard to, you know, I make jokes all the time about, you know, like heel versus heel from pro wrestling, which is essentially kind of what that is. It's the same construct, which, by the way, side note,
Les Thatcher, great pro wrestling mind, who has done some podcasts. I've heard some word about this, that he's a big fan of Justified, as are apparently some of the other people in the wrestling community. And I've heard that he has made comments along the lines of, like, they really know how to put heat on a baby face, because this is like classic old school booking. They get you to feel sorry for Raylan. You know, about halfway through the year, he's kind of at his lowest point, and then he kind of rallies for the babyface win in the end. They actually do, for as much as I joke about it and everything in life being pro wrestling, they actually do use some of the constructs in setting this up. And, you know, Boyd is always the heel you root for against the other heels. Now, it's hard to imagine, because the Crows, I mean, outside of Dewey, and Dewey's pretty lovable. Who doesn't love Dewey Crow? But he's not going to be, you know, the big swinging member of that family this year. So I guess if they end up coming head-to-head with Boyd, you're still going to root for Boyd. But the trajectory it's on right now is that, are we still going to be rooting for Boyd against other criminals? He's getting pretty skeezy through the first two episodes, and that's even by Boyd Crowder standards.
Well, I think that depends on really how you choose to enjoy the show. For instance, if it's a moment-to-moment, living-in-the-now situation, yeah, we might get to a point where Boyd falls out of favor with some people. The thing I can't help but shake is this sensation that by the end of season six, there's a possibility that we see a Boyd and Ava Crowder situation where they can walk away and sort of live some version of their dream that you mentioned earlier. I don't know how we get from where we stand today and that, but for me there's this idea that maybe they get to a point where they can do well enough for themselves and then move out into the, you know, suburbs we talked about last week, and try to live clean from that moment on. And maybe there's a journey that has to happen. Otherwise, if you're looking short term, yeah. I think it's one of these situations where for Boyd, I think it's going to get worse before it gets better. Maybe it never gets better. I don't know, but clearly, and I know that it's selfish on my part to do this, and I'm sure you don't mind, but I keep coming back to Breaking Bad because there seems to be so many little analogies.
Sure.
While Justified is popular, it hasn't reached that Breaking Bad level yet. You're seeing some of this, with Walt, where we are currently in the series, where you still like the guy, you're still kind of rooting for him, but he keeps sort of doing things that make you second guess your loyalty for him. And I think Boyd's doing that right now. And we're going to get to a point where it may just come down to, you know, win or go home kind of a mentality. Either Boyd's going to come out on top somehow, good, bad, or otherwise, or Boyd's going to seal his own demise. And where you stand on that really depends on where things go.
That's a very good point. And, again, there are a lot of similarities in terms of the style of things, certainly in terms of the quality of the writing and the characters. I mean, that's the most obvious point of continuity between Justified and Breaking Bad. I will tell you this, too. A little something for you and anybody else to look forward to going along. So I know that I believe you're still in season four, correct, on Breaking Bad?
I believe so.
Okay. So you won't get to this until later on, but we've talked about previously the crossover actors, the outstanding Jerry Burns, the outstanding Jim Beaver between the two shows. I can't think of the guy's name, unfortunately, at the moment. He's an excellent actor also. The guy who plays Devil is going to show up as a Devil-type criminal. Not a big one, but you'll recognize him. Season 5, both halves. You'll see him in there. So that'll put a warm glow in your stomach, I think, when you're watching that. But, the development of these characters and as they go along and looking at everything with Boyd, you are kind of right. There is a little bit of a similarity with Boyd and with Walter White. But I guess what would be a point of difference between the two is in terms of Walt's relationship with Skyler, which was pretty much coming apart at the pieces going all the way back to the pilot episode because of what the criminality did. Boyd and Ava are in it together with the criminality. And I was thinking about this earlier today as I was kind of getting the notes in my head, getting ready to talk to you about this and have a discussion. But what's really, really interesting is, and now it's been disrupted with Ava being behind bars, but you talked previously about Boyd's insane devotion to her. It's one of these things where they're both in the criminal lifestyle, but, like, within that, it is as, I guess healthy is in the eye of the beholder. Maybe I should or shouldn't use that word. I don't know. But, I mean, in terms of what we would think about as a healthy relationship, as far as how both parties look at one another, the selflessness and the devotion that they have, for a couple of criminals, it's really, 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 I guess it's contradictory in terms of how we would look at that. But a couple of criminals that are in love and devoted, and that's what, again, this is more destabilizing to Boyd than when he lost his faith. That was a thing of where, you know, he just kind of went on that journey at the end of season one, into season two. He worked in the mines for a while, and then working for Black Pike and the thing with Max Bennett, that was sort of like the methadone that got him back into the criminal lifestyle. And then he got back into the lifestyle, and he embraced it, and Ava embraced it with him. And we're seeing them separated right now, but they're still on that same path together. And I think at some point they're likely, in one way or another, I think, to be reunited outside of jail. We don't know how that's going to happen yet. Sheriff Mooney's another element we haven't talked about as well. Seen it through the first two episodes here. Now that he's been bought off by the Clover Hill gang, Sheriff Mooney is exactly the kind of thing that Boyd thought he was getting rid of with Sheriff Napier in season three. But now he's got a guy where, you know, Napier was just bought off. With Mooney, it really looks like it's personal after Boyd beat the piss out of him at the end of season four.
Yeah. God, I don't even know where to begin on that one. clearly, you know, Boyd and Ava will figure out a way. Something will happen. I think we saw at the end of this episode here tonight that maybe it's not a foregone conclusion that's going to happen in the next couple episodes. But there's definitely something going on with that subplot. One more quick side note. Ironically, as we're having this conversation, last few episodes that the missus and I have watched, I have not hated Skyler. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Really has nothing to do with what we're talking about. But but yeah, no, there's clearly going, there has to be, absolutely has to be, a reunion with Ava and Boyd. And it's, I would imagine it has to happen this season. The question is, how does the local sheriff's office, police department play into that? How does the Cloverfield people play into that? Is it going to be by legal means, or are they going to circumvent the system somehow? So there'll definitely be an interesting thing to see unfold. I just, from where we sit today, have no idea where that, how that plays out.
And those are the biggest questions in the next couple episodes to be playing out. The bigger ones seem to be dealing with Boyd at the moment. I'm sure Raylan's own subplot is going to catch up with this as well, but that's where we're at. A lot of the heat right now is on Boyd, the more dramatic developments, and we shall see as this goes along. But two episodes in and a season preview that we've done. Jason, I remember last summer when I got you into the show and when you really embraced it as you did, and you fervently spoke of wanting to evangelize on behalf of the show and to put something out there that would help draw people in. And I feel like we are doing that. Mission accomplished, my friend. I am enjoying the hell out of this, and it makes it easier to get from one week to the next, speaking for myself.
Yeah, it definitely does. It's funny because, you know, yes, it's Tuesday, and that means it's justified and all that. But it's almost allowing us to sort of watch the episode that week in a different sort of light, like actually worried about what means what and moving forward with it so that we can talk about it. So this is great. I know exactly how Chris Hardwick feels about doing Talking Dead and getting all those other Hollywood types to get involved, because it's good fun. It's a great show. Great writing, great development. It's a show that I think more people should be watching, and it's fun to talk about.
Well, we're spreading the word. We're doing our part, and again, we're having a blast doing it, and it's been tremendous. Again, thanks so much, Jason. Look forward to catching up with you next week and seeing what happened with episode 3.
Yes, sir.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.